This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Y'all, happy Friday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I hope you all have had a good week. I, for one, am very much looking forward to the weekend. I plan on unplugging from politics entirely for the entire weekend because it has been quite the fire hose of politics over the last couple of weeks here. We all will need a break. But not quite yet today. We'll talk about a bunch of things. But of course, I got Terry Barr coming to join each and every one of you for what's good, local, and overlooked in the 330 block here on the Maggie Dawn Show. And before that, I'm really excited to be joined by one of my Civic Media colleagues, my friend, and now he will also be your friend, Mark Becker, the host of The Rational Revolution. A former Republican will be joining me in the 3 o'clock hour on the phones to have a little discussion. And yesterday, because each and every one of you are so much an integral part of this show, because here at Civic Media, again, we're trying to do real news and have great conversation every day. Each and every one of you make this show so very special. I got an absolutely terrific question yesterday from one of our very savvy listeners. He asked me what has happened to the corporate tax rate in this country over many years, as well as what is the total amount of federal revenue, tax revenue, that has come from corporations as a percentage? How has that changed over the years? Because, of course, all of this is quite an important discussion as we're looking at a U.S. government that is highly likely to take the corporate tax rate down even lower under Donald Trump, lauded by some and derided by others. I'm one of those others that doesn't think further tax reductions are a good idea or even necessary for corporations and the wealthy. So we're going to get to all of that, but I wanted to start with something. I think most of you, if you've been listening to me for a while here on Civic Media, know that I'm an old has-been athlete. I've played my fair share of sports over the years. In fact, one of my earliest memories is for sporting was, of course, a little co-ed t-ball back in the day, which was good fun and certainly got me going down the sports rabbit hole, which has been very much a part of my life forever. I played rugby in college. I was a three-sport athlete in high school. Thought about maybe playing basketball because I'm quite tall for college on a scholarship. Probably wasn't good enough to quite get there, but thought about it and was fortunate enough to attend Marquette University, of course, on an academic scholarship. So I'd rather just get paid to be a student as opposed to a student athlete. We all know what a misnomer that is. But it's all that background, as well as the fact that I'm a Marquette alumni, that caused me to pay attention to a particular article that came out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a couple of days ago, and we just haven't had time yet to get to it, but I thought today would be a good opportunity. Excuse me. And it's an article about allegations of misconduct that have been leveled by former Marquette women's basketball players against the former coach, Carolyn Kiger, who is now the women's basketball coach at Penn State. And these allegations are coming from a range of players, but it includes several of her star players from her time where she was the coach of the Golden Eagles. This was first reported by Onward State, which is an independent news organization that covers Penn State athletics, obviously. Penn State athletics been through some rocky times in the last decade or so. And again, the story came out this week, and then the Journal Sentinel picked it up. And they spoke with many of these players that have made these accusations against their former coach. And I just wanted to get into these and then open this up for discussion with all of you about college athletics in general. Certainly the big picture has changed quite a lot since the Supreme Court ruled that college athletes had a right to market and sell their name, image, and likeness, so the NIL ruling. That has changed the contour of college athletics. But for the vast majority of college athletes, they're not selling their name, image, and likeness because nobody knows who they are. You know what I'm saying? So if nobody knows who you are, no business is going to pay you anything for your name, image, or likeness. So for the vast, vast majority of college athletes, especially women college athletes, though that has been changing, thank goodness, the NIL money ain't a real thing, right? And so the relationship, if you are a scholarship athlete attending a university, tends to be one of just an absolute power asymmetry. If a coach were to kick you off a team, you lose your scholarship in most universities. If you are injured and you cannot play, you often will get kicked off the team and lose your scholarship. So one way to think about this is that college athletes basically have one-year contracts and none of their money, none of their compensation, i.e. tuition, room, board, food, is guaranteed. They can lose it almost at any time. And listen, I've never been an athletic director of a major college sports program. I've never been a college coach, but I have been coached by a lot of different people over my career. Some good, some amazing, and some absolutely terrible. And I've seen some pretty incredible things from coaches. Basically, every kind of behavior that you could imagine, I have seen from coaches. We're going to discuss that. But if you are a college athlete, or you've got a kid that's a college athlete, or somebody you know, or you've got strong opinions about this, I want to hear about it. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Because what this article points to is the sort of abuse that can take such a toll on student athletes. And I think that there is an epidemic of this sort of abuse. I think there have been reports. Again, there was a hockey coach, I think from Harvard, that has been accused of absolutely grotesque misconduct by her players. This stuff matters. And I think on women's sports teams, again, because they don't enjoy the notoriety or the frankly, as much of the publicity that many men's athletic programs enjoy, that the potential for extraordinary abuse is, all else being equal, a bit higher in women's athletics. And the thing that has bugged me about this for so very, very long is that the reporting mechanisms and the systems that are supposed to protect athletes are completely unreliable, and they vary greatly from campus to campus, and as well as between public and private universities. So I want to get into all the details of this reporting from Marquette, about the Marquette women's basketball former coach, again, coach's name is Carolyn Kiger. She's now with Penn State. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. But I want to hear from you. I am so tired of this idea that college athletics is about the student. It's not. It really never has been. I mean, it has always been about the money that is generated for universities from these athletes that they purchase by promising them an education. And we could get into, and we can if y'all want to, the absurdities of the fact that colleges vary greatly on whether or not they're actually graduating these student athletes, whether these student athletes go on to have careers and are able to support themselves, or if it is, you know, a deeply exploitative arrangement in many cases. And again, there's variations from sport to sport, from university to university, between public and private universities. But again, I think fundamentally, the power asymmetries between coaches and these so-called student athletes are so extraordinary that the possibility for abuse and frankly, permanent psychological damage is quite high. We're going to talk about all that again. Want to hear from you. What are your experiences? What are your opinions about this fiction of the student athlete in college athletics? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. One of the players that went on the record to make these complaints about former Marquette women's basketball coach Carolyn Keeger is a player named Alizia Blockton. She was a pretty big star. She went to MU in the 2014-2015. I think that's when about she was there. Miss Blockton is a former Whitefish Bay Dominican standout who is the all-time leading scorer for the Golden Eagles women's program. Again, the all-time leading scorer for the Marquette women's basketball program. And here is what Blockton has said about Coach Keiger. She was our biggest enemy, our biggest hater, and she tried her hardest to tear us down, Blockton told Onward Sports. Quote, every single day we walked into the Al McGuire Center, which is where the Marquette basketball teams practice, and every single day you had a negative feeling. A lot of people didn't want to play basketball anymore, and that messed up a lot of people's mental health and careers because of how she treated people. A lot of people just pushed through it and decided to just move past it, but they didn't want her to control their stories. But in each and every way, she affected someone's career negatively when she was at Marquette. Wow. When like the number one women's player in the history of Marquette women's basketball is saying this woman was a nightmare to be coached by, folks should be paying attention. I'll discuss Penn State's response to these allegations, as well as the statements of a number of other players when we get back. And I'll share with you some of my experiences of coaches running the spectrum over my short and not so illustrious and long since passed athletic career. All that and more coming up on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. May the last one burn into flames.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You better march in time if you've got Coach Carolyn Keeger as your director of day-to-day athletic activities as a women's basketball player, or so the complaints from her former players go. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about college athletics, but specifically the fact that student athletes, and listen, they're students second. That is the system. That student athletes are frankly, highly susceptible to abuse by their coaches, and that the systems for reporting and dealing with that abuse are totally irregular and extremely variable from campus to campus. And all of this spurred by some recent reporting coming out of Penn State from their independent news organization that covers Penn State athletics. that outlet called Onward State. Coach Kiger, again, used to be the coach at MU Athletics. A number of her former MU starters and star players have gone on the record to accuse Coach Kiger of, frankly, mental abuse and not caring about their mental health and, frankly, not caring about their physical health either. I shared with you before some quotes from MU women's basketball all-time scoring leader, who called Kiger our biggest enemy, biggest hater, and that she tried her hardest to tear us down, that she messed up people's mental health and careers. Former MU starter Danielle King also made on-the-record comments about her time at MU. Ms. King said this, quote, "In my senior year, I was dealing with depressive and suicidal thoughts. I talked to coach about it, and she dismissed it. She basically talked me into seeing the student counselor or the counselor on campus and whatever. And she was just like, you need to go to the gym more, and basically shamed me in saying that my bad work ethic was the reason I was depressed." What? And Ms. King continued and said this, "My leg was broken and she called my dad and tried to tell my dad that I was lying about my injury. She wouldn't allow me to use crutches. She called the trainer because the doctor had ordered me to use crutches because on the x-ray you could see the crack in my shin from her running us all summer long and not giving us a break. And she called my dad and told him I was faking the injury and all this stuff." That is, it. I mean, like, talk about gaslighting at the most extreme. Former MU player Amanda Macchia also said this, "I understand that basketball and things like that affected the way she felt about me, but I would say that 80% of the way she treated me was not because of basketball. It was personal. It felt really personal. She just didn't like me. It got to a point that I think she just hated my guts. She wouldn't even look at me." Yoy. Kiger was really successful as a coach for the Golden Eagles. She went 99-64 in her five seasons. She was the 2018 Big East Coach of the Year. MU won the conference tournament title in the 2016-17 season, shared it in 17-18, and won the Big East Championship outright in 2018-19. But holy cow, that is just amazing. And I don't know, I think Penn State's reaction is a little weak. Here's what Penn State had to say in response to these allegations. "Penn State and Penn State Athletics take seriously any allegations of misconduct, and any reports are thoroughly reviewed. In addition, Intercollegiate Athletics conducts annual student-athlete surveys of its programs, as well as exit interviews with student-athletes and staff members. Based on direct feedback from student-athletes, Coach Kiger and the women's basketball staff provide a positive and inclusive environment with a focus on their development on and off the basketball court." I don't know. Would you trust her with your kid? Would you send your daughter to go play basketball for Coach Kiger, given what these former players have said? Pretty shocking. And I just, again, my concern is, especially in women's athletics, that doesn't get as much publicity, kind of rolls under the radar, right? Where women are less likely, all else being equal, unless you're absolute standouts, the Angel Reese sort of player, to get a name, image, and likeness contracts. So they, female student athletes, nearly universally absolutely depend on those scholarships to stay in school. So they have very little to no power to push back against coaches. This is not the first report of basically psychological warfare being waged against players by coaches. There is an absolutely damning report about Harvard's former, I don't even know if she's former, but Harvard's women's hockey coach. It's similar to this, where it's just psychological beating down. Some of the players in Harvard's hockey program described it as almost like a cult, that the coaches would pit like their preferred or favorite players against other players on the team. And some of that occurred with respect to skill levels, but also outside of what the skill level was, or outside of what the contribution of the athlete was to the team's success. Now, I got to tell you, and I'm not going to be specific about where I was playing at the time these things occurred, But I will tell you, I have played for a coach that absolutely picked favorites and pitted us against each other. I have played for coaches that when we didn't run scores up enough on terrible teams would make us run stairs for hours. And you heard that right. When we didn't run up the scores high enough on teams that we were handily beating would make us run stairs for hours. I have known coaches that have made sexual passes at players. I have also played for coaches who were absolutely amazing. And I can tell you where my head was the entire time, no matter how good or bad the coach was I wanted to play and I needed to do everything I could to stay in the good graces of those coaches. And I never wanted to be the person sitting on the bench. And so I was also raised like, hey, you pay attention to coaches and parents and teachers. And I can tell you, some of those coaches did some damage. I got through it, but not great. We're going to come back. I got to take care of a little business. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm going to move on to this tax discussion when we come back. So keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I'm not aware of too many things. I know what I know if you know what I mean.
Hey, y'all, welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm not aware of too many things, but I know what I know, and I'll share it with you every day from 2 to 4 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Talk universe. You can always listen at civicmedia.us. You can go grab the app for free from wherever you like to get your apps. And most importantly, if you're doing that, pick WAUK, my home station, my home skillet where I broadcast from as your home station, and check it out. You can listen in southeastern Wisconsin at 5:40 a.m. But again, all across the state, we got coverage. You can find your home station, again, at civicmedia.us or on the app. Again, as I began our show today, it is so important, your participation. And we had a great call and question yesterday from one of my regular callers. Asked me about what the corporate tax rate has been over time and the proportion of revenue, federal government revenue, tax revenues from corporate income taxes over time. And guess what? There's little graphs and statistics on this that people can look up. And so I did. I love it when y'all give me homework assignments. And you can join our conversation this afternoon, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. This is also top of mind because today I had been invited to speak at my alma mater at Marquette University at their College of Business, brand new, beautiful business building on the corner of 16th and Wisconsin, about regulatory economics, which sounds like a real snooze, but I tell you, it is where all the action is, because everything around us that impacts your quality of life on a day-to-day basis is basically being impacted in some way or another by regulations. If you think of any law or system of laws, is a system of regulations, right? And so there's become this sort of American zeitgeist where regulations are talked about from sort of one side of the spectrum as if they're inherently bad. Now, That's stupid. Regulations themselves aren't good or bad. The question always should be, why are we regulating things? Who's deciding? And what is the purpose of the regulation? What is the objective? What is the result that we wish to see from the regulation? And then are we assessing whether or not that regulation is indeed bringing about that result? Now, to me, one of the things that freaks me out the most about the Trump administration isn't the crazy appointments, right? They're crazy. And we'll maybe get to RFK and no more fluoride in our waters and like the full employment boom for dentists that apparently he's pitching. But it's not the appointments. What really scares me is this trifecta of potential problems. And that is the gutting of civil service, the overruling of the Chevron doctrine, which said that courts should defer to a regulation made by one of our regulatory agencies, i.e., that is created by experts to fill gaps in laws passed by Congress and signed by the president, when that regulation, when that rule is reasonable, and when the rule or the regulation is filling indeed a gap in the law. That's the Chevron deference. Well, the Supreme Court this past term, in addition to declaring presidents kings and bribes legal in government, also got rid of that deferential standard. I'm going to probably get to that in this half hour, but I'll talk about this again. So we've got the gutting of civil service. We've got no more deference to experts making rules under the Administrative Procedure Act, which includes the note and comment period, all that kind of stuff. No more deference, which means Article III judges who are not subject matter experts are basically going to decide which regulations are good and which are not. And listen, I don't want a guy without an MD telling me which drugs are safe for me to take. I want experts at the FDA doing that. And then third and finally, as part of all of this, is the threat to decent data. Because how would we ever analyze whether or not a regulation is doing what it should if we don't have good data? And one of the things that the federal government actually is quite exceptional at is data collection and data transparency. Now, they don't do it perfectly, and there are certain things that are woefully absent from their data collection. For example, they do not collect data on the racial demographics of auditing by the IRS. Wonder why that is. But I digress. In general, the federal government is quite extraordinary at the collection of data. It's what allows the Congressional Budget Office to provide nonpartisan fiscal analyses of different legislation. It's what allows the Bureau of Labor Statistics to provide data that economists, for good or bad, analyze to help us understand how our economy is doing. It's the data that allows the Fed to craft monetary and fiscal policy to help steady our economy and grow our GDP. It's the data that will help us measure what the impact of Trump's across-the-board 20, 200, or 2,000% tariffs are on the middle class. And if you wanted to promote a regulatory environment or a deregulatory environment that benefited your billionaire bro buddies and burdened the middle class and working people more, and you wanted to be able to lie about those impacts all the time, one, you'd fire all the experts that are civil servants. Two, you make sure that the courts don't have to listen to the few remaining experts that remain. And three, you'd stop collecting data. So that's what I'm worried about. At a really basic governmental day-to-day functioning area, it's one of the things that I want us, all of us, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or a whatever it is these days, to care about, is good data and good analysis. Because in the end, we should have some fidelity to does the law produce the outcome that we are promised when that regulation or law has been enacted? It is at the root, the very mechanism by which we hold our elected officials accountable. And so if you don't have good data and you don't have good civil servant experts, how are we going to know if what this next administration is doing is actually working for the middle class and working poor folks in this country? So with that, I wanted to talk about not just regulations in that meta sense, but to get into what I think are fundamentally some of the most important regulations in a capitalist democracy. And the first one is the protection of private property. You do not have capitalist democracies if you do not have the legal protections around private property. But secondly, and perhaps just as importantly, are the regulations that surround and how tax policy is executed in the country, because that's how the government funds itself. Everything else is basically secondary to the protection of private property, as well as what is tax policy in a democracy. Tax policy expresses all of our values. So the question yesterday from one of my regular on point, which was, again, to refresh our recollection, hey, Maggie, what has happened to the amount of revenue that the federal government collects that is collected specifically from corporations? In other words, what percentage of federal revenue over the last 50 years has come from corporate income tax? This question is especially important because, of course, Donald Trump in 2017 reduced taxes for billionaires and 100 millionaires and corporations. And yes, through the middle class, a small bone, but in terms of gross dollar amount, absolute dollar amount, the biggest winners by far were the really, really, really rich and the really, really, really powerful and profitable corporations. He reduced that tax rate. And one of his cornerstone proposals for his second administration, which will have no check or balance because both houses of Congress are now Republican, is to reduce taxes further for both corporations and billionaires and 100 millionaires. So to give you the raw data here, this is based on the data from the Congressional Budget Office, okay, specifically their report called The Budget and Economic Outlook 2023 to 2033, which was published in February of 2023, as well as the Office of Management and Budget, their historical tables, the budget of the United States government for fiscal year 2024, published in March of 2023. The revenue collected from corporate income taxes was at about 5.5% measured as a percentage of GDP. Okay, revenue from corporate income taxes in 1954 was about 5.5% of GDP. It is currently at less than 2. It is currently at less than 2%. So that is the short answer to our friend who asked this very, very important question. In the United States of America, by far the greatest amount of revenue on a year-over-year basis that funds everything from the military to a border wall to education funding to clean water funding, whatever it is, the vast majority of U.S. revenues come from individual income taxes. It's nearly half. So just step back and think about that for just a minute. Wow. Okay, corporate taxes as a percent of GDP have as a percentage of GDP over time has gone down precipitously. As a source of revenue measured as a percentage of revenue, individual income taxes are just under 50% of federal government revenue. Corporate taxes, 6%. Now, individually, and corporations pay also social insurance taxes, like Social Security taxes, Medicare, Medicaid, that kind of stuff. But again, income taxes nearly 50, corporate taxes in 2023, 6.5%. The next question you might think to yourself, Maggie, is, well, how does that compare to other large westernized democracy? One group of those countries is the OECD. So what is the U.S. share of revenue, the sources, how does that compare to the OECD countries' average? Okay, really critical metric. And here's what. Whereas the United States gets nearly half of all of its revenue from individual income taxes, the OECD average is under 25%. And whereas the U.S. gets only about 6.5% of its revenue from corporate taxes, the OECD average is nearly double that. Big, big, massive differences here. I'm going to dig into some other facts about taxes and why this matters so deeply to you when we come back. My friend Matt from Middleton on the text line is mentioning the very thing that I was going to say next. And I love it when y'all are smarter than I am. It's fabulous. He reminds us all of this. Thanks, Matt. Warren Buffett once said this: if corporations were taxed properly, the majority of us, the regular people, working middle class, even upper middle class folks, would be able to pay much, much less in taxes. And looking at these various metrics, that's showing you why. I'm going to talk more about that and the billions that the largest, most profitable corporations stand to gain yet again if Donald Trump gets his way with the taxes and giving giveaways to his billionaire bros like Elon Musk. We're going to take care of all of that when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Go get that app. Tell your friends about Civic. Spread the word. It's where we make economics and tax policy fun, or at least attempt to every day. Keep it locked, folks. I'll be back in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Back, everybody. How y'all doing? Happy Friday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we make economics and tax policy fun, or at least try to. I love this stuff, folks. I hope I'm making it interesting for all of you as well. We were talking before the break about firstly, how the proportion of federal revenue that comes from corporate tax has gone steadily down over the last 50 years. And the fact that the United States, unlike OECD countries, gets the vast majority of its income from individual income taxes and a much, much smaller proportion from corporate income taxes. And just to be clear, the 10 largest economies other than the United States all have rates between 25% and low 30%. That is higher than the U.S. and way higher than what Donald Trump proposes to bring the corporate income tax rate down to. He's proposing to take it down to 15%. We'd literally be the only large country with a corporate tax rate that low, which you might be saying, oh, that's great. More on that in a minute. The other thing I wanted to mention is this. When you compare the United States and the corporate tax receipts as a percentage of GDP to all other OECD countries, guess what, y'all? We have the lowest total corporate tax receipts of any OECD country as a percentage of GDP. This means when corporations pay less and we have revenue needs, it means that people pay more. And I've heard frequently from a couple of my most favorite callers that, well, if you raise corporate tax rates, corporations are going to leave. Not if the other large developed countries, like other OECD countries, have similar tax rates. Get what I'm saying here? Like, you only do that, you only triangulate around income tax, one, if you can. In other words, you can manufacture your product or you can do it somewhere else. Not all businesses can. And two, if those economies can supply the sort of workers that will actually allow you to make those things. And three, if you can repatriate the money back, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of things. But the assumption that if you have a tax rate that matches or is at least close to what other OECD countries are taxing in corporations in those countries, that corporations are going to leave the United States, one of the largest markets on the planet, is simply wrong. Consider this. If the Donald Trump corporate tax rate reduction that he has promised is put into place, that is reducing the corporate tax rate from 21 to 15%. By the way, none of the big corporations and no small corporations actually pay that. They pay a much lower effective tax rate, and we'll get to those facts in just a moment. But I want you to consider this. This is analysis by the Center for American Progress Action Fund. That tax cut, reducing corporate taxes even more, will give the largest 100 companies, i.e. the Fortune 100, a total annual estimated tax cut of $48 billion. And those largest 100 companies, they reported $1.1 trillion in profits in their last annual report. That is in 2023. So you're going to give the largest 100 companies that made $1.1 trillion in profits in 2023 a $48 billion annual tax cut on top of the tax cut that they already got. I want that to soak in. They made $1.1 trillion in profits, and somehow we think they need to have their taxes reduced another $48 billion every single year, forever. Just looking at the 10 largest companies alone, which is Meta, includes Meta, Comcast, and JPMC, they alone get a tax cut of $23 billion, and they reported in a single year, and they reported more than $520 billion in profits. Big Oil, they'll get $2.5 billion in tax reductions. They made more than $90 billion in profits last year. Why? Why? They don't need this money. And as we've talked about time and time again on this show, that increase in profits that you get when taxes are reduced, yeah, they're not spending that to raise wages. That's going to their shareholders and to their CEOs in executive pay packages. And by the way, you don't own a lot of those shares. We're not making that money. It's going to the elite of the elite here in the United States. We're going to take a little bit of a break. I'm going to come back. I got Mark Becker joining me. He's the host of Rational Revolution. We may talk a little tax policy as well with Mark. We'll dig in all coming up after news, weather, and sports, which is next for you here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Happy Friday. We'll be right back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.